listening to the Hometown Losers, the St. Louis Sports Podcast, with Josh, Adam, and OJ.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back here to the Hometown Losers Podcast, session number 32. I'm joined by, joined always by my co-host here and Adam and OJ. Gentlemen, are we doing okay today?
We're doing great here.
Same.
I'm glad to hear it, guys. It's been kind of a more boring week now that the in St. Louis sports, at least, that the trade deadline is passed. Obviously, St. Louis City is not playing because they're knocked out of their tournament for the Cup. And, you know, they're obviously Blues aren't playing. There's no Battlehawks right now. There's literally nothing.
The Cardinals haven't been the greatest.
Yeah, because we don't want to talk about the Cardinals.
It's just like, damn it.
Every single week. So this week we're going to do a little something different. We're not really going to – we will talk a little bit about the Blues a little bit later on, but we are going to talk a little bit more about the Women's World Cup and some NCAA stuff that we, don't normally talk in – heavy regard, although we have been talking about the Women's World Cup because obviously that is a big deal. Going from there. So speaking of the Women's World Cup, I'm just going to dive right into it, gentlemen. So we are now at the Elite Eight, so to speak, the final eight of the knockout stages as they have progressed. We are past the first round of that. So just a quick update. Spain is in. They beat Switzerland 5-1 in their matchup. The Netherlands beat South Africa 2-0 to get to theirs. Australia beat Denmark 2-0 to get to the Elite Eight. France beat Morocco 4-0. England survived a very nasty scare against Nigeria in penalties 4-2. Colombia was able to overtake Jamaica and beat them 1-0. Then Japan beat Norway 3-1. And then finally, the heartbreaker of them all. I cannot believe I stayed up to watch this fucking game at 4 a.m. Pardon my language. But Sweden outlasted the United States in penalties 5-4. So,
and that was a squeaker of a 1-2 in the PKs as well. So,
yeah. Damn. And let's go ahead and jump into that loss, because obviously that's, you know, going to be the primary thing that we definitely want to talk about here is, you know, the Team USA loss. And truthfully, what went wrong for the team in this World Cup? You know, Adam, I'll start with you. You know, what's your thought process of, like, what happened to Team USA and how they kind of just didn't get the job? Obviously, didn't get the job done, but almost
they just didn't
look like Team USA. Yeah,
they really didn't this year. Unfortunately, it's just not the same team that we're used to seeing. And we kind of seen that even from the very beginning whenever they were playing Vietnam. Like, they just really weren't putting the pressure on that we were used to seeing. They were just from the very beginning, you know, even though they won that game, they still didn't put the pressure on like what we're used to seeing from Team USA. And the fact that, like, throughout the tourney so far, they're just barely limping along. And so you could just tell, like, they're not going to get far. And Sweden obviously is coming in very hot right now. You're expecting, like, this is going to be really close. And I was actually surprised that Sweden, you know, didn't score in the game, at least in the 90 for sure. But for me, it's just that, you know, this group just unfortunately is not the same women that we've seen in the past. And they just don't have the they're just not driving it like we're used to seeing.
Yeah. OJ, what's your opinion on it? Did you see anything that kind of stuck out to you and like why the United States women just weren't able to really kind of separate themselves out of the groups?
Well, you know, I've read that some of their people that they're relying on currently are kind of young because they're, I guess, sort of in a transition stage from the old guard to the new one.
Yeah.
So due to some injuries, I had to rely more on some younger players that perhaps weren't ready to be relied upon like that yet, even though people seem to regard the new group as like the best team probably we've ever had talent wise. So certainly they should be able to get it done. I don't know. I've seen a lot of criticism of the coach too. I don't really know enough probably about soccer to comment on that myself too much.
But yeah. And I will say that I also did believe that there was a lot of coaching issues. I think that he made a lot of incorrect substitutions. I get it. As you said, OJ, you're playing with a lot of like injuries. I mean, Rubino was injured. You know, Rose Lavelle was injured as well. So there was definitely some injuries that were to your main players and to your main like attacking midfielders. So mm-hmm. that becomes a huge issue. But at the same time, like what he did in, against the game against Sweden, he brought in Rubino, obviously just to pretty much take the PKs. He brought her in, I think, at like the 85th minute or something like that. Mm-hmm. It's like, why don't you bring her in a lot earlier than that? Because she's not the, like the striker she was in the 19 World Cup, but she is an incredible passer, incredible presence for pressuring, and she can cross the ball in. And that's what we needed. We needed something to be able to, you know, to kind of break through. Adam, you brought it up. We didn't look very good against Vietnam, even though we won that game, right? Just didn't. We weren't crisp. We weren't finishing. And obviously, after that, we scored one goal against the Netherlands. Didn't score at all against Portugal.
Yeah. And I think something, just want to add into this, the fact that I also think that there was a lot of pressure on this team as well didn't help, that, you know, they're going for that three-peat. And I think there's a lot of, since there's that pressure, the nerves and everything else, is that having that pressure, like if you don't perform to this level, then you're going to be criticized. And I think that really got to them, honestly. And the fact that they've even said it themselves, that they felt like there was a lot of charisma within the team, too, you know, with the team itself. So, and even with, you know, Rapone, she just really didn't look like herself that we've seen her in the past two World Cups as well. You know, she was only really in for a short period of time. Granted, she is getting older. I get it. But, you know, she was a pivotal piece, though, in what we had seen in the past.
Right. And there's a couple things to that. You brought up some very good points, Adam, that I want to definitely address. When it comes to, we talked about this, I think last session, it might have been the session before that, but about the Women's World Cup was obviously Team USA is expected to win. And if they win silver, right, they get to the finals and they lose, it's still a massive disappointment for Team USA. And is that fair? It's really not fair, but that's the true, you know, the true reality of the situation. And OJ, you brought it up that we were relying on a lot of younger players like Sophie Smith, Trinity Rodman. Like these were players that were coming in that we were expected to just have the pressure of the world or a country really on your shoulders. And I think to your point, Adam, is what you brought up as well, that I think that the pressure got to them. This might actually free them now. Now that it's like, okay, we're no longer going to be, you know, going into the 27 Women's World Cup, you know, the old guard's going to be completely gone, but it's going to be, this is going to be some of the foundation that the young, talented women that we have are going to be able to really build themselves up. Now, I want to talk about Rubino as well, just about Megan. I think that a lot of what has been going on between 19 and 23 is all the political sideshow stuff that she's been doing, quite honestly. And I think that distracted her. I could be wrong, but I really do believe that it became an issue with her specifically on, you know, and like she has her rights, and, you know, everyone's got, can speak their own voice about everything else too. But I mean, again, there was a report that came out that said that she was a ringleader of telling the girls to not sing the national anthem. Like, okay, come on now. Like, this is getting to be a little ridiculous. Like, I understand that you believe that the United States has issues. I completely understand that. But at the same time, like, you're representing the country. Like, be at least happy that you're in the country, right? That's just kind of my opinion on it. And Rubino's always been my gal, especially for the LGBTQA and community. What she does for that community is amazing. But there's a lot of other things that I think that, you know, she has tried to like pull herself in there, use her platform to be able to talk about, when I don't necessarily think she's got all the info, if that makes sense. That's just, again, my opinion, obviously, but I do believe that that can lead to some, you know, some distractions as well in the team. OJ, you're going to say something?
I don't know. Not really. I don't know. I don't have a whole lot of, I don't know. Cause it's not like you can really say like, oh, well, you shouldn't care about that stuff. You know, like people say like, she's talking about, to her, it's more important than soccer. And like, if you look at it in the big scheme of things, if you're, you know, it is, you know, those issues are bigger than soccer. So
100%.
It's not surprising you're 100% right. Feel strongly about that, you know, and they're going to try and use their platform to whatever extent they can. And I guess that is just bigger than the sport. So.
Well, and a lot of it using your position to bring light to something that's important to you. And obviously being in the spotlight, you're able to do that more than like you or me, of course, because if we say it, no one cares, you know. So obviously you're in a position of power. That's usually what happens. You know, people in power usually have those kind of views or whatever, or at least make it vocal because the fact is people are paying attention to them, you know. So
exactly, they do assign a greater weight to their views than what they deserve as well, because on all these various topics, they're not any more educated than you or I or anything like that. They're normal people like us. I mean, they work hard at what they do and they enjoy whatever they enjoy, but like they don't have any kind of special information or analytical skills that a regular person doesn't have. They just have a voice, a way to project their voice, I should say. So.
Right. And that's kind of the point that I was bringing. It's I have no problem with the message. I have no problem with her using her voice, because that's that's one of the amazing things about America, is that you can pretty much stand up and say F you to anybody. You know what I mean? But the thing about it is, I think that it got away. If she wanted to. If you want to go like towards this political and use your presence, right? Use your global stage and your superstardom, essentially in that spotlight, to be a political advocate, that's completely fine. But understand what also got you to that area, got you to that spotlight, was being a world-class soccer player as well. You know, it's kind of like, I just don't like the method, so to speak. I feel that a lot of athletes do that nowadays, and it becomes a distraction for them specifically, because they're not necessarily like just focused on the sport. They're so focused on all this other stuff too. And that's completely fine. But then maybe you need to take a step back from soccer. Maybe you need to get one of these other younger girls a chance to be able to play. That's my thought process on it. You know what I mean? Because to me, Rubino didn't seem nearly, in the minutes she did play, she didn't seem nearly as crisp either. Now, some of that also comes from, you know, as when we had Danny on a while back, you know, he could tell you that the game is very, very, you got to be feeling it. You got to feel the flow of the game too. So some of that is unfair, you know, just throw her in at the 75th minute and be like, hey, we need to score a goal in 10 minutes.
Right.
You know, like that's, you know, like, so then you're going to be making mistakes and pushing forward and stuff.
But how much of it is – well, sorry.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, and how much is it the fact that she's, you know, 38 years old as well, and the fact that she's playing with some very young women as well? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, and you're 100% right. I do believe there's a combination of all things. I'm not trying to sit here and put blame on –
I would say that's probably the main one, though. Like,
she's playing with people that are, you know almost half her age, damn near. I'm just saying. I think a lot of that performance is the fact that she's just getting older, and really obviously this is, she stepped away, of course, after this. I get it, you know. So she knew it was her time, but I was expecting to see a little bit of a lesser presence of her from last time for sure. But you know, you still are hopeful that you know she can come out there and you know have a great send off, you know, per se, for her sake.
And not miss the damn penalty kick, like.
Right.
That really frustrated me, because you got brought in essentially to take that PK and then you miss it. And if we make that, we win that game. We had three chances to win that game.
Right.
And we just couldn't capitalize. And that's what is kind of most frustrating about it.
Yeah. It's just, I don't know. Sometimes you compete and you lose, and there's definitely have some issues to fix, but I mean, obviously they way underachieved. But
that's gonna
happen from time to time too.
But it happens. I mean, it's hard for a team to go three times in a row and win the championship. I mean, those teams are legendary. Yeah, I mean, and those teams that we know of that we can think of, like you know, the Bulls or the Yankees or whatever. You know, those were legendary teams. I mean, those were you know that have been able to win multiple championships basically back to back to back. You know, those were some incredible legendary teams. And I'm not trying to discount Team USA, but you know that's very hard to do in sports, especially like you said, the World Cup, because we'll never see that in the Men's World Cup. You know,
Yeah. I mean, like, especially now because the talent is so much closer. I mean, early when the World Cup first started on the men's side, you could probably pick a few teams, you know, Brazil, Argentina, and stuff like that, that were going to be like, okay, these teams have a chance to repeat, but the talent is so much closer now.
That's a good point, though, too. How much is it the fact that whenever, you know, like years ago, we just really were, you know, we didn't have a lot of real competition, but now that it's being developed, you know what I mean? Like how much that it has been developed and the talent has been, you know, much more competitive now as well. You know, they're catching up.
100% And you got to look at the development of women's soccer, not just in the United States, because obviously, you know, the United States, we have a decent soccer presence. We have a decent soccer presence here on the professional level, but internationally, I mean, you have Chelsea, you have Real Madrid, you have Barcelona, Arsenal, they all sponsor women's teams, and they're starting to become bigger and bigger presence. And they're starting to, again, they're getting the development too. You know, the product might not be as exciting as some of the men's and stuff like that, but they're getting the training for it. They're getting that, again, what they've been fighting for, the equal rights. And that is something that, again, I do believe in that political stuff that Rubino and the rest of the women were fighting for, you know, is, hey, we just want the resources and stuff. We already talked about last session about, you know, getting paid equal and what that looks like compared to the revenue. And some of that is a little askew. But when it comes to, hey, well, just treat us the same way, make sure that we're not like what they last year, what happened in the NCAA basketball tournament, like it became viral that it was the women's NCAA basketball tournament. They showed one of the women's locker rooms or something like that. And it was like literally just an open room. Like there was like nothing there. And so that's, you know, became like, oh yeah. So, but men's have all of this, you know, all these amenities, but we don't have
that. Right.
And I get it. The revenue's not there, but at the same time, like, come on, you got to treat them the right way.
It's like, give them, throw them a bone here. Come on out.
Yeah, you know, they're still human beings.
And that's like, okay, I guarantee you that there's money in there to, you know, to do that. So,
yeah, for sure. So, that's a great point, though, that you brought up, that I think that the rest of the world is starting to catch up. And I do believe, honestly, deep in my heart, that this is going to free up this Team USA. I think that they're now going to feel like it takes the pressure off. You know what I mean? It's like when you're bowling. So like if you're bowling and all of a sudden you start up and you get four strikes in a row, in that fifth frame, you're going to feel a lot of pressure to get a strike. But
of course,
once you don't get that strike, immediately all that pressure is off. And all of a sudden you can just continue to bowl a great game.
For sure.
I think that's kind of the same way here. You know,
we've seen that. I've seen that a lot in baseball with like hitting streaks and everything else. You know what I mean? Like there's just all this pressure. It's like they're not even worried about, you know, position playing and whatnot and everything else. It's just worried about, okay, I gotta get, you know, extend this hit, you know, this hit streak one more game.
Exactly.
Whatever. Right. Yeah. And then that's all that you're focused on is nothing. It's not the overall game itself. So I've seen that happen before.
Yeah, I can speak as, you know, a pitcher in Little League when I pitched a no-hitter. We still lost the damn game because of errors on my team. But I was still nervous as hell pitching into the seventh inning because, like, you know that in the back of the head, regardless if you try to tune it out, it's still there.
Yeah, imagine like pitching a no-hitter. Like you're nervous as hell come the ninth inning. You have got to be shaking.
Perfect game.
You know,
there's no way.
You got to be shaking at that point. Your emotions are going to get to you. You know.
Yeah. Oh, Jay, you were going to bring up something?
No, I wasn't.
Okay, I got you. Yeah, it's just like. Yeah, so I mean, it's unfortunate, as you said, the results are not there. But it's going to be very interesting now to see what happens. You know, in my opinion, too, you know, as I said, I kind of alluded to before, you know, we had a lack of finishing and we were very unconvincing on the offense, you know, 2-0 against Vietnam, which is ranked like 64th in the world. And then after that, you score one goal against Netherlands. And that was a very lucky goal in the Netherlands because we were losing that game big time. The Netherlands were taking it to us until Lindsey Horan got pissed off and scored a goal. But beyond that, you know, you couldn't get anything done against Portugal. You couldn't break Sweden, even though that game was our best game, the best 90 minutes that we had, just couldn't get anything done. But I also do believe that we didn't have a defense this time around. Normally we have a lot of good defenders that can shut down offensive opportunities, and we really didn't have that. I felt that the midfield, they were opponents were able to move the ball. Even Vietnam, they're able to move very successfully through our midfield, which is not necessarily a good thing. You want to push them to the wings, obviously, to force the ball back inside rather than marching straight down your gut. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
But it is what it is. And let me ask you guys here, you know, with them losing now, and this is the earliest that they've ever been exited out in the Women's World Cup in the first round, in the round 16 here. Does this hurt their legacy? OG, I'm going to start with you. Do you believe this hurts their legacy at all?
I mean, compared to if they'd won three in a row, then yeah.
But yeah.
Otherwise, nah.
Yeah, and
I mean, they're an incredible team. There's no doubt about it. So.
I think in the short term, it might, you know, because of course it's fresh in people's mind and, you know, people are disappointed and everything else. I think in the short term, you know, you're going to feel that initially. But I honestly think, you know, time will heal this a bit and people will, you know, have a tendency to let it go a little bit, especially come next time around. And like you said, I feel like some of that pressure will be off of us as well. So it actually might be a good thing in that sense, you know, as trying to make the best of a bad situation, you know, but I think that it'll take some of that pressure. Yeah.
You're 100% right. And to me, I feel that this is kind of like the tale of two different teams.
Yeah.
And one side of it, you know, they were fighting for their legacy and the other, they're just starting their journey, you know,
yeah,
like
they are.
Again, you know, Rodman and Smith, they're going to be there for a while. And some of these younger girls that are coming up, they're going to be there. And it's the start of their journey. You know, for me, I take a look at this and I say, you know, most of the vets on this team are now going to be retiring for international play. They've kind of already announced that Lindsey Horan said that she's done, which was kind of surprising, but it is what it is. Alex Morgan says she might come back. I don't know. She'd be like, I think 39 or 40. In the next World Cup, but who knows? We'll see. Yeah. The one thing I will say about this, and again, I'm going to go back to, and I really don't want to get into that because it's not what this podcast is about, but you know, in this time around the team was mirrored in, you know, the political controversies, but they didn't have the result this time. They did that in 2019. If you remember, they kneeled for the national anthem and stuff like that, but no one cared about that because guess what? They brought home the medal. So now it's going to be very interesting.
Now, of course, it is a distraction. Yeah. Yeah. Of course.
Yeah.
And
people tend to forget that. Yeah.
Yeah. 100%. If you win, all is forgiven. You know, it's the same thing. Like if you're a really good athlete, you know, and you get caught for drunk driving and stuff like that, you tend to like all of a sudden be able to walk away from that situation.
You know, he's still a good guy. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, exactly. Like it's stuff like that. So we'll see what it is. I mean, it was funny. I read an article about how apparently Trump was ecstatic that Rabino and the Women's United States team lost. And I'm just like, good Lord, just shut up, dude. Like, first and foremost, I get it.
Rooting
like,
against the United States is not cool with me.
I know, but, not a good look for you, especially when you're potentially going to be, you know, going for a
friend. I understand, like people are going after them for their politics, but like rooting against any team in USA, I'm not cool with that, but that's my opinion. So
Adam, that's my exact point here, right? So I don't agree with Rubino's. I agree with what she's saying, but not necessarily how she's doing it. But I'm still always going to be rooting for them.
I mean, that'd be like because USA, like, yeah, for sure. I mean, it'd be like a Cardinals player did something stupid or whatever. It's not like, oh, I'm glad the Cardinals lost, you know, because so and so on the team, you know, did something stupid. Like, you know, exactly. Whatever.
Make any sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We should all have that patriotism and then actually.
Right. 100%.
You know, just like the women, they, you know, I agree that I feel that they should be standing and, you know, singing the national anthem. That's what I would do, but they don't necessarily have to do that or whatever, but understand again that's going to come around that. But have pride that you're, you know, you're there for Team USA. And it's just like, I have pride watching you, even in the loss to Sweden. I said, well, you gave it your all. And they really did. You know, they definitely gave it their all. They just couldn't find the finishing touch. So, you know, it is what it is. It's just like, you know, Adam, I know you and I are going to a couple baseball games for the Cardinals soon. It's going to be like, all right, which this is going to suck, but at least we get free beer.
Well, we might get a win, you know. I mean, not to get into that. We're still topic, but we won a series, apparently, according to OJ. We just won against Tampa. So, there's a possibility.
Two or three from Tampa. At Tampa.
I might say there's a chance to make the playoffs.
There's a chance.
Dude,
no.
The crowds in Tampa are so much smaller than Busch Stadium this year. Like, what?
Yeah. Oh, OJ, it's super funny. So, I watched it wasn't obviously today's game, but it was yesterday's game. I watched a little bit of it. Actually, I think I watched it on a replay. It doesn't matter. But the announcers were like, yeah, you know, like, the stadium is so nice and blah, blah, blah. This was on the Tampa side. The stadium's so nice. You can't believe people don't come out here, blah, blah. I'm like, okay, Tropicana's not bad, but, like, it's not great either. So I don't know what like, you're trying to hype yourself up for. It's really not that great, but, you know, it is what it is. But,
I think it's terrible. I mean, they have a white underside of their roof, so you can't pick out the damn baseball. Who thought of that? That's
terrible.
That's terrible. Oh,
just,
man.
Yeah, you're not lying, man. It's just ridiculous. But, because that is a good point. I actually don't think I've ever really recognized that before. And now I'm just starting to think of that. I'm like, yeah, like, how the hell would you, especially if, like, why not just, like, lift the ball straight up into center field and hope that the guy doesn't see it?
Yeah,
exactly.
I mean, there's a chance. Yeah, like, that's a legitimate strategy.
It is really pretty stupid, yeah. A big, giant, freaking white dome over your stadium.
Yeah. When the laddie is like, right, it's just like pure white.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah,
absolutely. Because it's sort of transparent. Yeah, it's sort of opaque or whatever. Yeah.
And that's kind of similar to, like, if you guys remember the Montreal Expos stadium.
Where
they had the Olympics. It was all turf.
Ugh.
Yeah, because they originally built that.
Expo, yeah.
Yeah, because they originally built that stadium for the Olympics when it was hosted in Montreal.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I got you. Yeah. Yeah. So, but I remember that because I do remember an old game they were talking about. You know, one of the strategies is to hit the ball really hard on the ground because it's going to bounce a lot more and it's going to be hard to field for the infield because like there's no dirt, it's all turf.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting.
Yeah, that was Olympic Stadium. Yeah. I forgot all about that place, man. That place was quite a place and always empty. Speaking of another place that was always empty, and that was an empty ass stadium. Literally no one showed up to those games. No one showed up to those games at all.
I remember playing triple play baseball on the PS1. It was triple play 1998.
I had that.
That was Alex Rodriguez. Yeah, exactly. Alex Rodriguez.
Oh, I love that game.
For the Mariners. Yeah, it was amazing, dude. But anyways, I remember playing against my dad, and we always did random teams because we both would be Cardinals or the Yankees. Or in my point, I would be the Yankees, you'd be the Cardinals. And then like we're like, oh, we got bored of it. So we did random teams. And so he was the home team and he ended up getting Montreal. And I think I was the old Orioles or something like that. But the stadium was packed. And I remember my dad and I was like 6 or 7. My dad's just like, I don't think I've ever seen this stadium that full before. Like, holy crap. There's people there's actual people in the outfield.
Yeah, that's shocking. Yeah, I was going to say the last time that stadium actually had people in the outfield, you know, were packed in there was literally in the year that was, you know, was built for the Olympics, which I just looked it up, 1976.
Yeah, that's crazy.
It's been a minute.
And it still stands today, but it's basically just an empty dome. Empty
stadium. The America Dome now.
It's literally just called.
They're waiting for an XFL team.
Yeah, exactly.
Sounds like what happens in all these third world countries after they host the World Cup and the Olympics.
Or whatever. Yeah, they just all go to shit. Yeah, you hear about like over in China or anywhere. They just literally just let it all go to hell.
Yeah,
so I'm trying to remember.
They just let it fall down.
Yep,
they do.
Well, they can't keep it up because of the they don't have the venue to or these things that are coming through to support it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like come
I just
on,
read
man.
An article that I think it's some country in Africa. I can't remember now, but it was for the World Cup. So it's this giant soccer stadium, right? You know, but it's all just completely falling down, stuff like that. But the UK like SAS team, so like their elite, you know, their elite military force, they train there as like, you know, going in and like, yeah, they have like a kill box and stuff like that that's
Cape
in
Town
that building
Stadium.
And they do war games and stuff like that. I'm like, that's really like an interesting way to do it, I guess, because like it's a big structure and you're preparing for some stuff, I guess, you know,
I'll be
and in. I guess you like, I guess you would go to that country and say, hey, you know, like, we're going to rent this time and space, I guess. I don't know how you would do it, but
I guess Canada does still acknowledge their queen or whatever.
Oh, yeah. King now, but yeah.
So they're just.
Yeah, they're part of the Commonwealth. They're part of the Commonwealth for sure. They're part of the Commonwealth.
Oh, boy. Good shit.
Well, guys, let's get back on the topic of the World Cup here before we get real too far in the weeds. let's take a look here at the front runners for this Women's World Cup. You know, really, like, to me, there was three teams that kind of stuck out to me. You had England, which is probably the most, like, talented team that's left, although they have a red card to a major player that could expose them. Yeah, it's going to be interesting, but they've also had some mixed results too. I mean, they had a draw against Nigeria, obviously, and they were able to win in PKs. They have not looked all that great, like, collectively, but they have a lot of talented team. France seems to be hitting on all cylinders right now. They've got 10 goals in their last two games. They've been getting better too, as offensively, at least as the tournament continues, looks like. And the other one too is Japan, because, like, they've been really dominating in the tournament. They've only allowed one goal so far, and that was against Norway in the round of 16. And they have 16 goals in four games. Like, they just seem to be absolutely dominant. Damn. And also another thing too for Japan is that they beat Spain 4-0. And Spain coming into the World Cup, Spain was the number two women's team on FIFA's rankings, behind the United States. Obviously, they do have a tough challenge with Sweden, but it's gonna be interesting. Gentlemen, for you guys, and I'll start with you, Adam. I mean, is there another team besides these three, or any other team? Or, I mean, if you want to bring up some more points about the three teams, anybody else that kind of stands out to you?
Wow. I mean, I thought that for me, you know, initially I was looking at Australia having, you know, they were host a strong nation, team. Yeah. Host nation. I thought they had a strong possibility as well. For sure. That's one team I wanted to bring up for sure. It'll be interesting to see if they're going up against France, it looks like, next and on Saturday. But yeah, that's one to watch, I think, for me.
I think so as well. OJ, any team for you?
Oh, Japan for sure.
Yeah. Like, Japan, I think, is really starting to, like, make a charge, and they've always kind of been a side, like, a thorn in the side of Team USA, especially with Sweden as well. But, it, you know, this might be, like, Team Japan's, like, time to rise, so to speak.
Yeah, it sure seems like it, doesn't it?
Yeah, so, I mean, these are really good teams. All four teams that we just mentioned look like they, you know, could be a front runner. It's going to be interesting to see, obviously, how they can proceed out and who's going to end up winning the World Cup. Let's transition here and talk a little bit about the NCAA and all the crap that has been happening right now in the NCAA. So if you're not familiar with this situation, I'm going to kind of walk you guys through it. But the Pac-12, the Pacific 12, but, you know, informally known as the Pac-12, one of the major five power conferences in NCAA sports, is imploding. So this all
What's a power conference, Josh? No, I'm sorry.
There's five power conferences of the ACC, Big Ten, Big 12, the SEC, excuse me, and the Pac-12. Those are considered to be the Power Five conferences, right? That might change now, because we don't know if the Pac-12 is going to survive. But so back in June of 22, UCLA and USC announced that they were departing the Pac-12 for the Big Ten. Obviously, two big programs for them. July 27th of this year, Colorado states, hey, we left the Big 12 a few years back. We're going back to the Big 12. So they lost three teams at that point without bringing anybody back to kind of like make up for any of the teams. 6 days later, after Colorado says, hey, we're leaving, Oregon and Washington announced that they're leaving for the Big 10. Literally 2 hours later, Arizona State, and Utah, all three of those teams say we're leaving for the Big 12. So there's only four teams left in the Pac-12. Only four teams: like Stanford, Cal, like Washington State.
The Pac-12.
A lot of that happens because that way you can bring over an even amount of teams. You know what I mean? But anyway,
very well coordinated, I guess.
Yeah, there's only Stanford, Cal, Washington State, and Oregon State that are left. There's been some conversations on the from the ACC to see if they can bring over Stanford and Cal. But there's been, I don't know if that's going to happen right now. There's also a report that came out that this was happened a few days ago, that the commissioner of the Pac-12, George, and I'm going to butcher this, but Khalifkov, he apparently asked the Big 12 before Oregon and Washington, Arizona State and Utah. So before those guys even left, he had asked the Big 12 if they could take all the teams besides Oregon State and Washington State. So could the Big 10 take 10 more teams, essentially? Obviously, that fell through. And now Pac-12 has been in meetings with the Mountain West about a possible merger. So the Mountain West is a mid-major. I know. It is a absolute shit show.
This is insane.
Yeah. Like, it's getting to be just absolutely ridiculous right now. And Pac-12, I mean, listen, they're surviving only on four teams, obviously. I mean, but in reality, they're only surviving on two teams, and that's Cal and really it's Stanford. Stanford is going to be the jewel of anybody that can pick them up as quote unquote a free agent. Stanford is ranked number three in the country at NCAA eligible schools, is ranked number three in academics. They're ranked number one in athletic support. They have also the most well-rounded athletic program, and not just basketball, not just football, not the big ones. They also compete very well in wrestling, rowing, tennis, all of it. They are very, very good. They've been ranked number one for the best athletic program and results of athletic program, I think 8 or 9 times in the past 10 years. That's saying something. You know what I mean? So, and plus, again, they're incredibly academic and they also have a lot of money as well. So it's going to be very interesting to see what ends up happening here with the Pac-12. But yeah, I have no idea what's going to end up happening here. But, you know, OJ, what's your thoughts on this here with, you know, the Pac-12 kind of imploding? You know, do you think that they're going to be able to do anything?
Well, with the recent additions of Texas and Oklahoma, I believe the SEC could stand to get another academics type school. So I think they should go ahead and go add Stanford. Can you imagine Stanford in the SEC?
Yeah, it's going to be, that would be very interesting for sure.
I mean, especially because
it would be because they're just going to get their, like, especially in football, they're going to get their asses handed to them. You know, that's just,
they do,
you
know, okay in basketball though, probably.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, they actually hold their own. Stanford's not a, they're not like a top, they're not like a blue blood like Kentucky or Kansas, right?
No, but
they are of, you know, definitely a second or third tier if you want to get more technical with it. But yeah, they're pretty damn good.
That's what I'm saying. They have a lot to offer.
Yeah. I think to me on paper, what makes the most sense is, and I said this actually before ACC even started talking to them. I was having some conversations with some of my friends, and they were just saying, they were talking about the NCAA and what is that going to make sense. And I said, you listen, it's going to make sense for Stanford and for Cal to go to the ACC. And the reason why actually is not even about the sports. I mean, obviously that's where the money is going to come from, but it comes from an academic standpoint. The ACC, when it comes to academics, besides obviously Ivy League, if you compare them to the rest of the Power Five conferences, their academics is grossly superior. I mean, you still have FSU, is a very hard school to get into, even in state. You know, you have Duke, you have North Carolina, you have Wake Forest. Like, you have a lot of private schools on the Atlantic coast that are very, very hard to get into. So I think that is, you know, bringing in Stanford, which again is an academic school, Cal, which is, you know, obviously Caltech is Cal. So you have a lot of, you have a lot of that, you know, you have a lot of academic recruiting and stuff. So it would make the sense. But the problem with it is the ACC is primarily obviously on the Atlantic coast, obviously it's the Atlantic Coast Conference.
Yeah.
So how do you now have two teams that are all in California? How do you bring them across the country? You know, so I think that's going to be their biggest roadblock right now.
See, I kind of disagree with you on that being the best fit for them. And it's because, especially in this new day and age of the super conferences, I think it's more important to diversify the schools in your conference rather than just stack everybody up that's like each other. That's what I meant. Like, you know, get a good another good academic school in the SEC. You know, it just makes the SEC more good at more things, I should say. And I don't know.
And the SEC is going to be closer too, because you have, you know, Texas and Oklahoma that are going to be like further out west, right? So that is a little bit easier in travel when it comes to, you know, finding you know, conferences within the conference or divisions within that conference and stuff. But you know, we'll talk about the SEC here in just a little bit, when because I want to talk about like NCAA realignment like in general. But the SEC is sitting on 16 teams right now, so it's it's just one of those things. Yeah, so
you need
it's
to add another thing too. Yeah, so I guess you could take Caltech too there, right?
Yeah, yeah, I would take Cal if I'm SEC. Honestly, if I'm the ACC, if I'm the Big 12, if I'm anybody, I'm going to take Stanford, but I'm going to take Cal as well. Like, those are the two biggest ones, and Oregon State and Washington State, they're pretty much just going to be like on the outside looking in. I don't think anybody really wants to take them. The only conference that makes sense to me for Oregon State and Washington State to go to is the Big Ten. I don't think that the Big Ten will take them. The only reason why is because they could technically make revenue off of that. They have Oregon and Washington that just announced that they're leaving for the Pac-12 to go to the Big Ten. So why not get their two rival schools to also go? You know what I mean? But that would put the Big Ten at 20 schools. Yeah, that's the only one that makes sense. The Big 12 has already said that they have no appetite to bring in anybody else right now. So they're not bringing anybody. So then it comes down to your decision, or not to your decision, but to your point of view, is, you know, the SEC, which that also does make sense, and for the ACC. But I think for the ACC and the the ACC and the SEC, all these acronyms, geez. I think that for those two conferences, it only makes sense to bring in just Cal and just Stanford. I don't think you're going to bring in Oregon State or Washington State. You know what I mean? And again, I don't even know if I really don't feel that the Stanford and Cal would go to the Big Ten either. This is kind of my opinion. Yeah. I don't know why, but I just feel like they don't want to be a part of the Big Ten. So it's going to be really interesting. But let me ask you, OJ, do you think that first and foremost, let me ask you, do you think that a merger with the Mountain West is actually going to happen? And B, if that merger does happen, do you think that's still going to be considered a Power Five conference? I mean, like, when you look at it in the Mountain West, they got quite a few teams. They have the Air Force, Boise, they have Colorado State, Fresno, Hawaii, Nevada, New Mexico, San Diego State, San Jose State, UNLV. They have Utah State and Wyoming, you know, but no teams that really pop out at you. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they're not going to compete in football at all like that. No, they definitely – that would definitely make them into a G5 or G school. You know what I mean? Yeah. Or conference, I should say. Sorry. They're still – whatever. But because, yeah, I mean, there's a reason that those teams aren't in the Power 5 right now. So, yeah, I think
–
to me, it would downgrade it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Even if so, like, if you combine all those teams with the four remaining teams from the Pac-12, really the only teams that are there are Stanford and Cal. And Cal is not good at football. They're okay at basketball, and they're okay at baseball. But it's really Stanford. Like, Stanford's the only team there that's academically going to be able to – or not academically, but that's going to be able to get you any money. You know what I mean? Like, no one else is going to Boise had three phenomenal years back in the day, but they can never crack. That was before, obviously, the college playoffs, but they can never crack the top two. And then every time they get to a major bowl game, they lost, except for that one against Oklahoma. I can't forget about that one. But, you know, Hawaii had the exact same thing, like 2 years of like excellence. And now they just, you know, forgotten about. And everybody in like the Mountain West that would have been really good, like TCU, for example, they're gone because Big 12 picked them up because they were smart about it. So I don't know. Like, I feel that if the Pac-12 is going to survive and they're going to be taking in all these teams for the Mountain West, first and foremost, I don't think it makes sense for them to take all of Mountain West. And I also don't think that if you're like on the commission board for the Mountain West, I also don't think it makes sense for you to say, okay, cool, well, take like half our teams and then we'll retain the other half. That doesn't make sense either. It's either going to be a full merger or not. And that doesn't make sense because they already have 14 teams. So that's going to put them at 18 teams. And again, your top two teams are going to be Stanford and Cal. And then you'll have Oregon State and Washington State. And then the rest of these guys, like Oregon State and Washington State, I think can fit into this fold. You know what I mean? But I don't think that Stanford and Cal deserve to be in that because they're just going to be head and shoulders above everybody else.
Yeah. No, I agree. Yeah, so that's what I mean.
Yeah, and the other thing too about it is, like, you know, if I'm the Pac-12, you know, I essentially want to keep your name, because the Pac-12 has been around for over 100 years as a division, so, or as a conference, excuse me. So, you mean, you're kind of won that name, and that's kind of what you would, I guess, go to the Mountain West and say, hey, listen, you know, we have at least name recognition. So you can come here and you can get some clout from us, and we'll be able to, you know, get better TV deals and stuff like that. I just don't think that's going to happen. It's the reason why a lot of these schools left. It's because they're not making any money off their current TV deals. So
yeah.
if you couldn't get a good deal for USC or UCLA or Oregon, then how are you going to get a good deal for Boise or Air Force or Hawaii? You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
Come on.
I mean, people will get excited about Boise, and then, but yeah, Air Force, I don't think anyone cares about that. It's always Army, Navy, right? So.
Yeah. But Boise is going to be like that old veteran that you get, and you're just like, oh my God, you remember Boise back when they, like, they were so good, like back in 2008, you know, like 15 years ago. Well, let's go.
Yeah.
You know, it feels like
yesterday.
Yeah, exactly. You're going to try to trick your mind into believing that it feels like that. But man, I don't know.
It feels like it to me.
I'm sorry.
It does feel like it to me. That's all I'm saying.
Oh yeah. Well, because, like, again, if you, out of the remaining teams in the Mountain West, who's done well in basketball or football and basketball? Let's be honest. Those are the two sports that make the most money in NCAA. And yeah, in fact, football and basketball combined make 97% of the revenue for NCAA sports, which is pretty freaking ridiculous. And we know football is like 70% of that. But anyways, you know, Boise State is, they're pretty decent at basketball too. They're not the greatest, but, you know, especially being in the Mountain West, where you got Gonzaga and stuff, but, you know, they're not bad. But, like, everybody else, I mean, you have, like, flashes and pans, like Hawaii, Nevada, New Mexico. San Diego State is not bad. They're kind of like that mid-major, like, they're like the prototypical mid-major team. You know what I mean? Mid-major school, like, they're pretty good. San Jose State's kind of same thing. UNLV, same thing. UNLV won a couple national titles back in the day with basketball, but that's also a flash in the pan. They haven't been good since then. So, you know, Wyoming had a couple good years for football. It's just, it's kind of all over the place. So it's that consistency that you're going to obviously want. But if I'm the Pac-12 and I'm trying to rebuild a conference by, let's just say they wanted to say, okay, we're not going to merge with the Mountain West, we're going to try to, like, grab some teams from other conferences, there's nobody left, because everybody else is all these mid-majors that are just don't have the money or the resources to bring in for good athletics, because it's this arms race now, you know, between all the other, you know, Power Five conferences. So,
well, exactly.
I'm not. So. Yeah. I'm not terribly too certain, like, what's going to end up happening with the Pac-12. My gut feeling says that eventually the ACC is going to make a move, and they're going to grab Stanford and Cal. Or, as you said, maybe they'll go to the SEC, because the SEC has actually been pretty quiet about that front right now. So who knows? Maybe that's going to come a little later on. I think that's going to end up happening. And if Oregon State and Washington State stay in a Power Five, they'll get absorbed into the Big Ten. But I think they'll end up going to the Mountain West. And the Pac-12, I think, is just going to be gone. That's kind of my feeling to it. But yeah, we'll see. But I kind of want to talk. I'm sorry, were you going to say something?
No, yeah, because, I mean, I agree. Like, it probably makes the most sense for the four schools remaining to just try and get into some other power conferences any way they can.
Yeah.
Rather than
take care of yourself.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, and that's kind of the whole point of the conference in the first place, right, is to for these schools to all group together. So if they just, it might just be best for all of them to dissolve the Pac-12 altogether.
Yeah. And, you know, obviously, the as long as those four teams are there, the Pac-12 will still exist. But I think before we get to the end of this month, all four of those teams are going to have at different conferences. I just think that there's not enough money to go around in the Pac-12, especially now that there's literally no TV deals anymore. So that's going to be interesting.
Yeah.
I have no idea what's going to end up happening there. But I did want to talk about, like, the NCAA realignment period. Like, again, I kind of alluded to it. So going through this, like, SEC has 16 teams in it now. They added two in 91 with South Carolina, Arkansas. They added two in 2012, which was Mizzou and Texas A&M. from the Big Ten or Big 12, excuse me. And they just added two, as you alluded to, OJ, in Texas and Oklahoma. They are starting now in 24. The Big Ten is now at 18 teams. Good God. They added Penn State 90, Nebraska and 11, Maryland and Rutgers in 2014. And now they're adding four more teams in Oregon, UCLA, USC, and Washington for the 24 season. Big 10, Big 12. And actually, I want to talk about the Big 12 real quick. The Big 12 is very impressive that they've survived this long, because it was literally last year, the conversation was actually 2 years ago, that the Big 12 was going to dissolve because they only had eight teams. And it was not seen to be a very powerful. The only thing that kept it alive was basketball, because you had Kansas. That was literally it. You know what I mean? That was the only revenue stream that they really had, because Big 12 football sucked. They didn't really have anybody else besides Texas and stuff like that. But Texas wasn't like the Texas that we grew up with. You know what I mean? Yeah. So it became, you know, just more obsolete, and like they were regrowing and stuff. But give it to them. The Big 12 added several teams. So actually, as I put out here, so they're at 16 teams now. So they've grown from all the teams that they lost. But they lost six teams to the SEC, the Big 10, and the Pac-12. They lost one to the Pac-12, four to the SEC, and one to the Big 10. Then they added, they added TCU and West Virginia in 12, which were two great pickups, you know, from mid-major conferences, but that are decent at football, decent at basketball, right? Perfect. So they resupply those. Now, then last year, after Cincinnati did what they did and made it to the college playoffs, they said, okay, we're going to take a look at the AAC conference. And they brought in Cincinnati, Houston, UCF, and BYU, the four best teams from that conference. Perfect. Makes a lot of sense. Again, mid-majors that were probably excelling out a little bit. Now they're adding back Colorado, Arizona, Arizona State, and Utah in 24. So, you know, Big 12 is the conference that we grew up with, especially when it came to football because of Mizzou. So I'm glad that they're still staying around. The ACC is now at 14 teams.
Ain't gonna look the same at all, though. saying it's completely different.
Yeah. And all this is completely – the only conference that literally looks the exact same for what we grew up with in a sense – is ACC, because ACC is still at 14 teams. They had a Florida State in 91, you know, Miami and Virginia Tech in 04, probably before people really pay attention. They added Boston College in 05. Then they added in between 13 and 14, they added Pittsburgh, Syracuse, and Louisville, all, you know, moves that kind of went under the radar. But, you know, it to me, it's still the same SEC. You know what I mean? Because like none of those teams were like Pittsburgh, Syracuse, and Louisville were kind of the exact same moves like what the Big 12 did, grabbing Cincinnati, Houston, UCF, or BYU. It's not like losing Kansas or Texas or Oklahoma. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or if, for the Big 12, you look at the Big 12, man, we used to have Nebraska, Oklahoma, Texas, like, and Mizzou. Mm. They're all gone. So it's just crazy.
Yeah.
So let me ask you here, you know, OJ, what do you think about this current arm race in college sports? Is it good for college sports? Is it bad for them? Like, what's your opinion on that?
Well, it depends on your take, like, on tradition within college sports, I guess, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you truly, dearly hold to that tradition, then this is terrible. But you can almost look at it in a cyclical way where, theoretically, if what happens does happen, you're just remaking it the same way. Like, in, you know, 100 years from now, if, you know, everything's still going the same way it is, generally speaking, people have other, like, completely other sacred memories that have nothing to do with it anymore, you know? So, I don't know.
Yeah, the only thing I think that go ahead.
Well, because they're going to have to divide it up at some point. I mean, once you get conferences with like 20 teams in them, you're going to split it into divisions, and it's going to wind up being like just remaking conferences. Like, at the end of the day, it's all still going to be the same thing. So,
yeah, but I think it's, you're going to be, you know, adding those divisions within those conferences and stuff like that. But I you know, to your point, there are two big things that stick out to me on the negative side. One, rivalries. we're losing a lot of rivalries with all these teams moving back and forth, back and forth. Right now. Yeah, they can make new rivalries, but that doesn't have the same flair as a rivalry that's been going on for 50 plus years. You know what I mean? Like
for now, I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, I mean, the Blues fans used to hate the Detroit Red Wings the most. Now Blues fans hate the Blackhawks the most. And it's not because that happened before they moved Detroit to the East. People were already starting to hate the Blackhawks more over here. I'm just saying it's like, you know, it's part of its generations of fans and all that kind of stuff. So on a large enough time scale, I don't think it'll make any kind of difference. And so I guess the question is how much is the reason people watch college sports to do with their loyalty and fondness to the traditions of their school that they attended and stuff like that? And how much is it because they like watching the sport itself? You know, that's really what we'll find out here, I guess, because, you know, if it's the one where they care a lot about the traditions and stuff, maybe enough people stop watching that it'll hurt it.
That's a good point too, because I do believe that's the minority of sports fans, you know what I mean? But like my dad's friend, and I can't remember his name now, it doesn't matter, but he went to Mizzou and was a diehard Mizzou Tigers fan, right? Still probably is, but not nearly to the level that he was once they left the Big 12. And the reason why is because he knew that they were just going to get destroyed in the SEC, and he went to the school and he lived and breathed those rivalries with KU the other school, Texas and stuff. Like, he lived and breathed those, you know what I mean? So all of a sudden now you don't have that, it feels empty. And again, like Mizzou, it did surprisingly well in the first couple of years, but obviously being an SEC football, it's gonna be really hard to be good. But regardless, that's a good point, you know, and that on a large enough scale that, you know, like his kids are gonna remember only the Tigers being in the SEC and those rivalries that they've been developing now. The only other negative, one of the other big negatives that pops out to me though is where does this end? So okay, Pac-12 goes away, right? Okay, now we're down to four conferences, and the weakest conference out of that, when you look at like strength of teams, is going to be the ACC probably. A, because they only have 14 teams, and a lot of those teams are not nearly as good in football, which is going to be your biggest revenue streams. And you know, like I look at Clemson, and like Clemson, they're okay at they're okay at, obviously great at football, okay at basketball, they're incredibly good at soccer, but no one cares about soccer in college sports, at least. So you know, it's not generating money. But you know, when's that going to happen where they're going to go to the SEC, or you know, Big 12 says, hey, come on over here, or whatever have you. And I think that that's where these conferences are going to have to, like, there's not going to be a dividing line to say, okay, well, like a conference can only take 22 teams or 20 teams or whatever have you. But at some point, it's going to hurt the product, I think. You know what I mean? Of like having the real top national teams, say all of them get absorbed into like one or two. Okay, cool. So it's going to be the national championship's going to be, I'm just going to use the top two when it comes to football. All right, the national football playoffs are going to be SEC versus the Big Ten. I mean, yes, they're already kind of that way. I get that. But at the same time, that's what it's going to feel like if you move all these teams there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. But the important part for me really is that what's not happening, which a lot of people expected to happen, is that it's not only all the like top power schools grouping together. Like there are like mid-range schools that are joining like the SEC and the Big Ten and stuff like that. Guys, you know, it's not all the top dogs grouping. It's not like all the top teams from the Big Ten and the SEC forming their own super conference, which I think is what people were afraid of. But it's still got like a mixture of skill levels within the group, but it's a narrower range now. Like you have less teams that are like super bad. It's a overall higher quality, I guess. But my point is, it's not like all the top blue bloods are shutting everybody else out. It's still mixed up enough to where, you know, I think people still want to watch it.
Yeah. I agree, but also kind of disagree in a sense, because like the SEC, it only took teams that are or that are actually pretty pretty powerful when it comes to football rankings specifically, because I think the SEC is definitely more focused on football than basketball. But yeah, you know, when you take a look at who they've added over the years, South Carolina, good football school, Arkansas, good football school, Mizzou, okay football. I'm just kidding, but good football school they are. Texas A&M, and obviously Texas and Oklahoma. Yeah, well, I mean, but that's the thing about it. Like, there was a time before, like, they were ranked number one, and we couldn't beat Oklahoma, lost twice to them, and that's why we didn't get to the national championship. There was a time before that we were playing in the national title game, and we lost. You know what I mean? So, there's chances that we had there. But we're, regardless, they're big schools, right? Big Ten, you have Penn State, big school, Nebraska. Then you have Oregon, UCLA, USC, Washington, all four. Washington's kind of like that, like, weird one, but they've had a lot of successful history, and they do have a lot of money that comes to that program. But so that's six really powerful teams. They did add Maryland and Rutgers, but at the time when they added Maryland and Rutgers, which was in 14, Maryland was starting to actually be on the rise for football and were also a top contender for basketball. Same thing with Rutgers. Now they've kind of fallen down the wayside, and a lot of that has to do now they're facing a lot more tougher competition in the Big Ten rather than the ACC. You know, you look at the like ACC again, ACC is going to be the only one where I feel like you're kind of that in the Big 12 that you're right that they're bringing in a lot of mid-major schools. Big 12, we just talked about it, you know, TCU and West Virginia, those were big mid-major schools that got brought into it, right? And then they brought in BYU, Cincinnati, Houston, UCF, right? Okay, boom. That comes into the Big 12. But the Big 12 and the ACC are the only conferences that have done that, because the SEC and the Big 10 are only taking the bigger schools at this point. Again, like, I don't think that Oregon State or Washington State is going to go to the Big 10. That's the only one that makes sense to me, but I don't think they're going to take them. You know what I mean?
I don't know. I think they will get into one of the conferences. I'm not sure which one, but I think they'll get in somewhere. I don't think they're small to be left out on their own, I guess.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, because to me, they've been in Division One, or not Division One, excuse me, they've been in Power Five for such a long time in all sports. It does feel like low hanging fruit for one of these conferences to be like, okay, and it's two teams. It's not just like one solitary thing where it's like, okay, we're going to go from like 14 teams to 15 and make this really odd and weird. It'd be going from 14 to 16 or something. You know what I mean? So I don't know, but yeah, I do believe what's happening right now, especially in college football, because basketball is also a little weird when it comes to saying, like, for example, Notre Dame's in the ACC for everything besides football. They're independent in football. Notre Dame is part of the Big Ten in hockey. It doesn't matter. But, like, you know what I mean? Like, there's all these weird ones. Like, Mizzou is not in for wrestling. They're not in the SEC. They're in the Big 12 still. Kind of weird. You know what I mean? There's just a lot of, like, weird things that – but for football specifically, I feel like the overachieving mid-major teams – like TCU, they got snatched up by the Big 12 right away, and they brought over another one to have even numbers in West Virginia. And then Cincinnati overachieves. They get to the playoffs. Boom, four teams from that conference in the AAC, which were all good teams, gets absorbed right back in the Big 12 as well. So I think that that's kind of where we're at, is like, if you have a good year, you might be able to bring it over, but they have to have historic years too. If that makes sense, because like Cincinnati in the AAC has been very good for a long time. Obviously, it's going to be interesting to see how they historically will continue to do in the Big 12, because it's a lot higher competition than what you're, you know, facing in the AAC. But I don't know. Like, that's the thing about it. I do believe this is my personal feelings, that there is a separation that's happening right now, that the Power Five conferences are absorbing all competitive teams, and it's going to leave these mid-majors with teams that nobody wants to watch. Again, like what we talked about, Mountain West, their top dog, and at least for football and actually for basketball too, is Boise State. I wonder how many people actually watch Boise State games. I couldn't even tell you how to watch a Boise State game if it's not on ESPN. You know what I mean?
I mean, I can find that pretty easy, but I mean,
if you're going on like streaming sites and stuff like that, but I'm just talking about, like, you know, but where they get, but you're also watching it for free that way too.
Like, you know what I mean? Cable, like, you're not package would you it. Need to watch it? I have no clue.
That's kind of what I'm getting at, though. You see what I'm saying? So, like, I think that what they're doing is they're absorbing all these teams that are making money, and once they see a team is starting to make money because they're getting a lot more backing, a lot more following, and they're doing well, they're boom pulling them right out and leaving these mid majors to not have a damn dime. I just feel that's going to really hurt. Go ahead.
No, it really hurts. It does really hurt those schools. My point is, it's not as exclusive as I guess I was imagining it would be.
As it could have been. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it's definitely not to the extent. So I feel like they are cutting out some of the schools that are perceived to be lesser for whatever reason, most likely because they're not good at football. And they are cutting some of them off the bottom, but they're not cutting off so much that I think it'll kill all interest, I guess is my point. So, and then I don't know, because like it also does feel like all the teams will find a place somewhere again because it'll be too profitable for it to not happen. Yeah. You know what I mean? So like people are going to find their places ultimately. I bet you.
Well, I agree with you because like, so let's say that, okay, let's say that Cal and Stanford go to SEC or the ACC, right? Or even Big Ten. I don't know because those are only three power conferences because Big 12 says they're not taking them. Let's say that happens. You have Oregon State and Washington State. Dude, if no other conference picks them up, the Mountain West is going to be licking their chops going, holy crap, these are two Power Five schools. Yeah, they're going to dominate our programs. But that's a lot more money than we're used to. So we'll definitely take them. You know what I mean? So,
well, yeah, absolutely. That's what it's more like, this is more like a restructuring so far rather than like just everything being shaken and turned upside down. It's really more just an organizational thing. Ultimately, if you like zoom out, and think about it.
But, yeah. I tell you what I would like to see. It will never happen, obviously, because, you know, you write the contracts to go into these conferences to be able to make money and there's too much money involved. But I would love to see relegation. So like a team that shouldn't belong in these Power Five conferences should get booted out. You know what I mean? And so then that allows these mid-major teams.
Yeah, I think that would actually work with college sport very well.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, I agree.
Much better than any other thing in America. Like if you want relegation, you should definitely institute it in college sports.
I agree. And obviously, because then we could see how it would actually truly work in a semi-professional stance, so to speak, right? And then maybe look into it in pro sports. So that way you don't have teams tanking and stuff. But regardless, I mean, that's going to be a lot more because you'd have to create multiple leagues and stuff. But this is definitely something you can do in college sports. I look at Cincinnati as a prime example. Though.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. You're 100% right. Division. So like, I mean, it's all already under one organization. And you have like the core fan base for every school is going to be people that went there. So even if they get relegated, they're still going to have people
or watching. In the area. Yeah.
Like, exactly yeah. Right. Like, yeah. So it's like, it's the exact format that would work. So,
and you have, so if your team has been relegated, you obviously, you know, you're not national contenders, but at the same time, you're rooting to be elevated again. You know what I mean? And I think that, you know, instead of having all these bowl games, or you can still have the bowl games, but then you still have them. It means something more than just, hey, we won a bowl game. Because let's be honest, there's fucking a million bowl games and no one cares. Oh, they have, you know, the Quaker State like oil bowl. What the fuck are like who's going to watch that? You know what I mean? So I think that they can mean something. But I take a look at specifically Cincinnati, right? Cincinnati wins the AAC. I think it was 7 years in a row or something like that. They go undefeated. Yeah. And they finally get their due and get into the playoffs, right? Yes, they get their butts handed to them by Alabama. But it took all of that for them to finally be invited to the Big 12. You know what I mean? Yeah. So, like, yeah. I think that – but at the same time, what is Iowa State doing in – like, what is the Cyclones doing in football? Like, you know, sorry if you're an Iowa State fan. I'm just using them as an example. But, like, Northwestern, what are they doing? You know, they've been in the Big 10 forever. Right. The only thing that they can do well, in my opinion, is basketball. And that hasn't been that great for them. Right. Their football sucks. Oh. So
another thing you have to understand is that it's not only sports that conferences look at when they're trying to decide what schools they want. I mean, academics are a thing. Research schools, money, are a big deal. Because they bring in a boatload of money, too. Like,
exactly.
I believe Wisconsin is one that has a huge research department or whatever. They do a lot of stuff up there, like, so I mean, yeah, that's also another thing. And I don't know any of the info for a lot of these schools about that. I'd have to actually research that a little bit. So,
yeah, and you're 100% right. You know, like there's no easy solution to this, right? The relegation as we just talked about, that sounds great to you and me, but that does alter not just sports. It alters their funding when it comes to like Cal, you know, great tech school. That alters their ability to do research projects. You know what I mean? So that is a very good point as well.
The research brings in a lot of funding. Like it is a moneymaker itself a lot.
Yeah, yes and no. Well, yeah, hon, you're 100% right. It does. It does bring in money. But also too, like if you're also having a very good football team with that, you're getting even more money get brought in. But if you are not having a good football program, right, now you need academic donations rather than just normal fans, if that makes sense. You know what I mean? So like when it comes to it's easier to get money from people, from alumni, from sponsors around, stuff like that, when they can get their name recognition, but also when they can get some, like when they got a good product to buy into. But if it's just research and stuff like that, they're relying on scientific people to be able to, like, you know, give them money and grants and stuff like that. So again, there's a lot of important
research to be done for a lot of for-profit businesses. It is a huge moneymaker. It really is.
Well, I agree. I'm not trying to discount that. I'm just saying that, like, again, I'm just saying that if you, like, say that you're Stanford, you have a lot of money that comes in, they're a decent research school because they're number three in academics and they do a lot of research, especially on the medical side in Stanford. But let's say they join the SEC and you start getting whomped in football. And I'm not saying this would happen, but I'm just saying all of a sudden their sponsorship dollars start depleting quite a bit. They're not making as much off their TV deals anymore because they're no longer the big dogs there. That's Alabama. You know, that's Ole Miss. That's these other schools that have been in the SEC. So they're not getting as big of a profit share on that, right? So all of a sudden now people are not giving as much money into the bad product that's there. And all of a sudden they can't give that money. The school can't to put it towards the research programs. You see what I'm saying? So now they're having to rely on people outside to be able to give them the grants for that. But they're also not getting as much exposure and stuff. It's just kind of a yin and yang, I guess. But
no, I'm also telling not you that's what they that. No, I'm well, I'm telling you the research stuff they do stands on its own as a moneymaker is what I'm trying to say. Like they don't need the football program to support that. It's schools like Wisconsin where they have like some huge facilities and stuff. Like they I don't know. I'm just saying like that is like seen as something that's valuable as well as
for sure, 100%,
being good at the sports. So like that's another consideration to make for some of these schools that don't make sense as much when you, at first glance, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Like an Oregon State kind of thing. I see exactly what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see what ends up happening here, you know, in the NCAA and now this massive realignment we're going to happen. Hopefully we can get some more updates and maybe next week we can talk a little bit about more once the picture gets a little bit clearer or something, but it's something definitely to monitor. But let's transition here and talk a little bit about the only team, I guess, that we want to talk about, even though we really don't want to talk about them, in St. Louis scene, and that's the Blues, right? So it's been quite a while since we've talked about the Blues. The season is starting to get closer and closer. You know, obviously we know that it's going to be an interesting season as we lost a lot of talent.
Hell,
we have a lot of younger players and stuff like that that are coming along, but I'm not terribly concerned.
Lots of old faces. Lots of old faces coming back. We got Sammy Blay back. Yeah, and
but he was back with us last year.
I know that. My point is, he is an old face coming back. We didn't have him at the start of last season. This season, he's going to be on the team from the start. And if he plays for the whole season this year, like he played after he joined us last season, he's going to have a hell of a season.
There you go.
Be a steal for what we got Sammy Blay on right now. God, can you imagine if he was good and we have him and Buchnevich on the same team?
I mean, I'm not.
If you're a Rangers fan.
I get that point. If you're a Rangers fan and all of a sudden they start producing, especially since Tarasenko's not on the Rangers anymore.
Well, because we traded them. we traded them Sammy Blais for Pavel Buchnevich, and then Sammy Blais sucked with them, and then we get him back for nothing, and he's good.
Yeah, for a rental player that is now in Ottawa. Like, you know, yeah, in Ottawa. So
that's hilarious, dude. I hope that happens.
All right, so let's get to some of our expectations here, OJ. As you just pointed out, it sounds like you're pretty happy about this situation, maybe coming in the year, maybe being the silver lining here to what a lot of people are expecting to be a down year. Adam, what's your expectations for this team, though, coming into this season?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not as optimistic. I really wish I would be. I was, but unfortunately, the with the draft and whatnot, it's going to take some time before we actually see some, you know, real improvements of the team. Yeah, mm-hmm. Same improvements of those teams and real improvements of the team. Unfortunately for me, I just don't see us, you know, able to make the playoffs at all this year. I mean, I just, for this upcoming year, this upcoming season, I just don't see it happening, unfortunately.
Yeah, listen, I'm with you. I have our record. This is my prediction for our record. Is 30 wins, 47 losses, and 5 overtime losses for 65 points. I got us in seventh overall in the Central Division, right in front of the Coyotes. And I got us 28th at the end of the season in front of San Jose, which I think San Jose is just not going to get any better. Columbus, which, again, is not getting better, and obviously Arizona. So I that's kind of where I have us predicted. I know it's very bleak looking, but I'm trying to be like as realistic as possible on this without being too grim on the outcome. I think that they can definitely go in stretches and maybe they're a little bit better than this, but I definitely still don't think that they're a playoff team. You know what I mean? To your point, Adam, it's just, there's just the lack of talent that we have is especially like on the wings and stuff like that. We have some players that can definitely perform, but not like guys that are going to be able to get you, not like a Tarasenko is going to be able to get you 30 goals. You know what I mean? I'm not really seeing that. So, you know, OJ, you sounded definitely more optimistic than what Adam and I are bringing to the table right now. What are your kind of predictions are for this year? What do you believe the Blues can end up in the ranking?
Oh, boy. That's a good question. I don't know. I mean, so I look at it, I do think Sundquist might have a good year. And the reason is, I mean, he had, like, hip surgeries a couple years ago. So if he's starting to actually get healthy again, and all, you know, he gets back to his old production because he's still young enough, 29. Mm-hmm. So he's like right in his prime. So him, I think, I don't know. Sammy Blais looked good last year, guys. I don't know, man. I mean, they got some guys that can become guys. Like, they have some potential. Mm-hmm. Like, Jakub Vrána, that's another one. Like, yep.
I agree with Jakub Vrána. Yeah, for sure.
He could potentially be like a comeback player of the year kind of guy. You know, he'll make us America's team when we get into the playoffs and try and go on a surprise run.
How are we going to address the D-line issues though? You know?
I know our D sucks probably, so, but
that's
kind of
where I'm like
that,
you know
I don't know. I feel like some of the guys got complacent last year. At least it looked like it the way they were playing.
I agree.
And I think some of the complacent guys are gone. And I think that the guys that are on the team were embarrassed last season. And I think you're going to see a lot better effort all around. And we'll see more what the team can actually be like. Because I really think a part of our defensive issues isn't just on the defenseman. I do think our forwards consistently fail to back check hard enough.
Yeah.
And if they can fix that, then this team could be good. Like, they could make the playoffs. And so I think they'll be motivated to fix that. So that's my Pollyanna take.
All right. It'll be interesting too to see what with Benny, you know, how if he's able to what kind of year he's gonna have, because he had a rough.
Yeah. Sorry. Go ahead.
I'm just saying, because obviously he wasn't consistent last year at all, and it's going to be interesting to see how he looks, you know, this season coming in for sure.
Yeah. And I was going to respond to that as well. That made me think of Joel Hofer, who looked pretty good last season in the games he played. So, I mean, obviously small sample size, but he looks NHL ready. So, I mean, if we can kind of get to a 1A, 1B situation with Binnington and him, that's then your goalie tandem probably looks a lot better, too, because, as you said, Binnington can struggle at times, and I think he's like a Paul DeJong type of guy where they struggle to focus over the course of a long season. Mm-hmm. They struggle to focus the same every single night, and so they need time off so that they can focus when they are in net easier. They need the mental break more. Mm-hmm. I think that's kind of what it is. So if you get Binnington a guy to split the load, assuming he's okay with it, because, I mean, I don't know if he would complain about it or what. I don't know how much he can complain about it at this stage. But you get that kind of situation going, you might have a good goalie. You get your forwards playing a good team game again. And they brought in guys. Well, I feel like generally they brought in guys that play a good team game. I don't know about Kevin Hayes, but like,
yeah.
I mean, I guess he should score some points, though. So.
See, and this is kind of like, I got a counterpoint to that when it comes to Binnington. I don't think he's like Paul DeJong. It doesn't concentrate over a long season or anything like that. Because look at the season we had after we won the Cup. We were definitely one of the best teams, if not the best team in the NHL before COVID happened. And then what ended up happening, though, was our defense started to slump down. The year after that, we didn't have Petrangelo. We didn't have Jay Bouwmeester. We didn't have a lot of these players. We didn't have Gunnarsson, too, for most of the season due to injury. We lost Steen. We lost a lot of that competitiveness in front of the net. And then this past year, what I think a lot of it was, I think it was more the fact that he was just pissed and tired of getting scored on. He was tired of losing. And I think that's also attributed to him, you know, lashing out more. And people were like, oh, this guy's, you know,
he's really emotional. Like, all
and it's like he's tired of getting scored on, where he feels like he's left on an island a lot. I'm not just trying. I mean,
absolutely,
there were some things last year that I saw that were, OK, that was really bad. Like, you let a really weak goal come in. But there was also a lot of times where he was left on an island a lot. And so it's like Martin Brodeur couldn't even get to that. You know what I mean? So it's just like,
well, yeah, I would say all the more reason to have a 1A, 1B kind of scenario.
Well, I agree with you. Yeah, I agree with you.
So I definitely agree with you. I'm saying that that's kind of an X factor for the Blues this year is how does Joel Hofer perform? So, I mean, if he's really ready and he's good and you can have that kind of situation with a 60-40 split or something like that, like, that really helps your team. That's going to help you win a lot of games. So, I mean, they have some X factors that could really turn things positive quick. So it's kind of exciting to look for that kind of stuff.
Well, speaking of the X factors here, let's get to some line predictions and where we feel that this team is going to be when it comes to the line. Like, I'll start here, essentially. Like, a line one, I think that we have Buchnevich on the left wing, Robert Thomas up the center, and then Kyra on the right wing. I mean, I think that's kind of what everyone's kind of seeing. There might be some differences and stuff like that. You know, Adam, do you have anything different, or do you see that pairing as well?
I think that it's pretty consistent. Overall, I'm looking to see maybe a Justin Falk. I don't know.
Well, Justin Falk is on D. I'm just talking about
the. Oh, you're talking about the first. Line. Okay, I thought you were talking about the first. Yeah. Gotcha.
So Buchnevich on the wing, on the left wing, center Thomas and Kyra on the right wing. It's kind of what, you know, I see for the line one there, at least.
Interesting.
Yeah, OJ, is that way you see it, OJ, or do you see it differently?
Oh, I could see them trying to break up Thomas and Kyra, so. Maybe they would have Kyrie like on a second, like sort of scoring line, and you might have like Robert Thomas because they seem to trust him somewhat defensively now. So you might have him maybe paired with Pavel Buchnevich, who's another good all around player. And like, let me see, who else would you put on that?
That's the thing. That's why I chose Kyrie. That's why I chose the line of Thomas and Kyrie, because I don't think Saad is a top line guy. I don't think Vrana at this point is a top line guy. I think maybe he can get there, but
I could see Saad maybe playing on that line if they're looking to have it be more similar to like the Ryan O'Reilly lines were for us. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's an option at some point. But Other than that, I don't mind. Certainly don't mind that first line. You know, put all our best guys together and let them go do their thing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for the second line, I have Saad on the left wing, Shin at center, and then Rana on the right wing. So kind of, again, balancing out that the top end talent that we have, so to speak. You know, what's your thoughts on that, OJ?
Well, I did notice that you put two older, slower guys with Vrana, who's pretty fast. So I don't know if that's I don't know if that's advantageous or not. I mean, maybe it is.
It's probably not, but I think that putting Shin or Saad on the third line doesn't make any sense either, though. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So, I'd rather have Vrana with some, at least one other fast guy if we could. But maybe you put like Perunovic out on defense or something with that. I don't know.
Yeah, that's good. That's a good point, too. You could definitely do that. Adam, what's your take on that second line?
Yeah, I think that's pretty solid line. Saad, Shin, maybe Kapanen, maybe. So,
yeah, that's what I saw too. That a lot of people think that maybe Kapanen could be in that second pair. I just don't know if he's earned that spot on the Blues just yet, but maybe, you know what I mean? That's another option, you know, that you definitely have. It's kind of the same thing like when you look at Kyrou and Saad, maybe, for switching out the top line pairing. You know, it's kind of the same thing with Vrana and Kapanen. But at the same time, like, I think you want to get, like, Vrana, who's had a lot of that mental anguish. I think that you want to try to give him as many opportunities as you can.
And right.
Maybe being put on the third line is not necessarily going to be the greatest. But maybe that is the antidote. I don't know. Were you going to say something, OJ?
Could you have, like, Vrana, Kapanen, Shen? I don't know if that makes
sense. That's where I'm saying it. To me, that doesn't necessarily make all that much sense, but it's a line that you potentially could do. Like, my third line I have is Neighbors on the left wing, Hayes at center, which I think that's kind of makes sense,
makes
obviously,
sense.
And then Kapanen in the right wing. You know, obviously, we brought in Hayes to be a center.
So really it sounds like your right winger is going to be, you know, you're going to just interchange whether it's Kapanen or Vrana, one of the two, it sounds like, for the most part.
And in all honesty, when I was kind of making when I made the lines, I started with the centers because I thought it was very, very obvious on our four starting centers, right? I thought Thomas number one, Shin number two, Hayes number three, and then Sonny number four. To me, that makes the most sense. Go ahead.
What about Neighbors? You think Neighbors looking at any time at center?
He might be a rotational on the third. Like, I have him as a winger starting off. Most of these guys have played center at some point in their career. In fact, like, center is the most drafted position because you know you can put him the wings, but you can also play him at center. You know what I mean? It's only the true goal scorers like the Alexander Ovechkins or the Vladimir Tarasenko's that get to be like a winger full time, so to speak.
Yeah. What I'm saying is I'm pretty sure Neighbors has been playing center the entire time, though, in his minor league career, right?
So, correct, but do you bump Kevin Hayes, who you brought in to be a center, or do you bump Sonny, who you brought in again to be a center? You know what I mean? I think that's
– I don't know. Where would you rather have speed, Josh, at center or wing?
It depends on how you're playing. I mean, so you need – it's a good question. It really depends on how that line is structured, period. If you have, like, I take a look at Anaheim back in the day when they drafted Paul Kariya, right? Paul Kariya is incredibly fast, smaller guy, right? But they had bigger bodies at center and they had bigger body at left wing. And so they used Kariya's speed to kind of offset that a little bit. You don't necessarily need to have all the speed there. You take a look at David Backes back in the day. David Backes was actually a relatively slower skater. In the NHL comparatively, but he was able to get in front of the net and he was able to do the dirty work and stuff like that, right? And when you compared him with Vladimir Tarasenko, who had some speed, David Perron on that line as well at certain points, who had more speed than David Backes, so you had more speed on the wing. So it really just depends on how you're playing and depends on the chemistry, first and foremost, about all this. We can take a look at stats and like throw them into like NHL 23 or something like that, but it's not going to matter. It's about how you play with those players too, you know what I mean?
Sure, because I was thinking that you might put your slower guy, like, I don't know. So, like I said, Oscar Sundquist had the hip surgeries and stuff. Might be good to start him on, like, third line wing for the start of the season and see how he does, you know?
But he's so good at face-offs. Like, that's kind of the reason why you want him to be in the center. You know what I mean? Like Neighbors, I have to take a look. I don't think Neighbors' faceoff percentage was actually even that great. Give me a second.
I was just trying to figure I'd rather give him less responsibility at first and let him work his way into more.
Well, I see what you're saying on that aspect of things. Yeah. But
yeah.
But again, there's a lot that goes into it because you're 100% right. There's a lot more responsibilities and stuff like that. But, you know, you need to have decent faceoff percentage. You need to definitely be able to have presence in the modern day NHL, excuse me. You don't necessarily have to be like a true center where you stay in that position all the time. If somebody backfills your position and gets to the front of the net and then gets to be on to the point and stuff like that, that happens a lot in the new modern NHL. You know what I mean? So there is a lot of rotation that can definitely happen there. But yeah, that's why I'm like, it's just in. Go ahead.
No, I mean, you could do the same thing with Jake Neighbors too, I guess. But I do want to give him a chance to be a center. Like, I don't want to just push.
He is labeled as a winger, just so you know.
Oh, is he now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's interesting. I guess they already decided then, huh?
Yeah, and his faceoff percentage, last year when he did take faceoffs, 36%. That's pretty weak.
They do have him just as a left wing, interesting. So I guess they're not going to play him at center, so that's moot.
Yeah, that's been settled. They're
just transitioning up. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, because like again, that's 36% on a face-off percentage is not very good, but you know it is what it is. So
yeah,
because like I want to take a look at Sundqvist real quick. You know, obviously the injuries and stuff.
You're gonna
like
put
that,
him.
But
yeah, and obviously you're gonna put him on your fourth line center.
Yeah, 43%, like significantly better.
Makes sense. Yeah. So,
yeah. And he actually was 66%, obviously coming off injury and stuff, but 66% when he was with Minnesota last year, 41%. So he 50%. So like again, there's a yin and yang to it. You know what I mean? Give and take for sure.
Yeah.
Well, the fourth line that I have is Turpinchenko, Sonny, as I said, and then Blay. I think that Blay, again, fits well in that right wing on the fourth line, but could eventually come up to a third line, stuff like that as well. But I do believe that Sammy Blay played really well for us as a fourth line guy. You know, what's your guys' thoughts about that line?
I agree with that 100%. Yeah, makes sense.
I'd put him where they had him last year.
Well, wasn't he on the fourth line, right wing?
Yeah, I believe so. So, I mean, he did pretty well. So, I mean, if that's where he feels comfortable, we start him out there.
Yeah. Right. And then just let him try to develop from there and you know, he can get better.
Oh, yeah. Because when he was younger, like, he definitely showed flashes of being able to play in the top six. Like, there was a point where they thought he was a top six player. And there's no,
for sure.
Let's say for sure. Can't be that yet. He has just spent a bunch of time injured thanks to PK Subban. So yeah, I'm kind of curious. He's only 27. He seemed to be feeling it last year. I mean, I read an article where they had an interview with him and stuff. He seems pumped to be back. So I mean, having that kind of being that pumped, probably going to play pretty well.
Yeah, I would hope so. You know, if only time will tell, right? What's going to end up happening? But yeah,
for sure.
Let's take a look at the D line pairings in here. And everyone I keep saying is Letty and Pareko number one, Krug and Folk number two. I think those are kind of interchangeable. Like
The reason why I was mentioning earlier. Sorry, I was thinking that we were talking about our defensive pairings earlier. That's why I was mentioning probably Krug and Folk. I didn't realize we were starting the other. My apologies. But yeah, I'm thinking probably Krug and Falk on
the first pairing.
First pair, yeah, for me.
Yeah. And to me, I believe that the top two pairings of Krug and Falk and Letty and Pareko, I think those are kind of set in stone. Like, they've worked very well as partners.
Absolutely.
But to your point, Adam, like, I do believe they're kind of interchangeable as who's going to be starting and who's going to be the second pairing. Yeah. You know, Krug and Falk, I think, definitely have more of that upside offensive potential.
Uh-huh.
You know, where they're trying to get Letty to be more of like the Jay Bomeister, so they can form that shutdown line that that Pareko had a good year with. So I'm not terribly too certain, but I do believe that is definitely the top two pairings I just don't know how they're going to rotate him in and out, you know.
I get
OJ, do you have any thought process to that as well?
Nah, that sounds about right. I mean, it's all good either way. I mean, I guess it's more interesting your bottom two, because you got Callie Rosen, Scott Perunovich, Bobby Bortuzzo,
Scandella.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. I mean, what I have written down here is Scandella and Bortuzzo, just to give the veterans the opportunity. And when somebody gets injured or they start underperforming, get the younger guys in, right? I do have Rosen as like a healthy scratch, but it's just so hard. It's so hard to tell, because like Scandella, I feel like has to be in because you're paying him. You know what I mean? Bortuzzo can be like one of those rotational guys.
I mean, Scandella, you're paying anyway. I don't know if he's up after this year or not, but you're paying him anyway. And then, I don't know.
I'm just saying
I would probably see what goes on in camp. Cause like,
well, for sure.
I honestly think Callie Rosen has played well enough to earn a shot too. And he's 29 now. He spent most of his time in the minors, but he had a pretty good season last season. I'd give him a shot. So I don't know.
Yeah, and I think that it definitely gets to be it's so difficult, right? Especially on the defensive. When you look at the defensive, you only typically go in with six defensemen, you know, with three different pairings, right? And so, like, okay, cool. When you know your top four, regardless, like, it's like, all right, well, then if we have four people to fit into two slots, who is it and how do we do it? You know what I mean? It definitely is hard, but I think it's the reason why I definitely chose Scandella. I don't think that Scandella deserves to be there. He's not terrible, but I would much rather give Rosen the opportunity over Scandella. The problem with it is it's so much easier to sit Rosen on his contract and say he's a healthy scratch rather than having the $4.5 million as a healthy scratch. You know what I mean? Like, is your point, OJ? I mean, you're paying him regardless, but at the same time, like, it's like, okay, well then why don't we just move him? Like, why is he even in the lineup then? You're on this team, you know what I mean? Just go trade him.
I mean, so I'm saying they probably will give him the chance first, you know, they'll probably give him first crack at it, but I mean, to me, I'd rather see what it looks like coming out of camp.
Agreed. Yeah, and maybe again, this is all, you know, predicated on what we know now, which we don't know how the camp looks. They had the prospect camp, which went pretty well, but you know, we'll see how camp goes. We'll see how the preseason goes and how they want to continue to rotate and stuff like that. So it's going to be interesting for the Blues this year. Hopefully that we can get back to our winning ways. But all right, guys, let's head to our sign out here. Adam, you want to tell the good listeners about our socials and how they can reach us?
Yes, definitely check us out on facebook.com/thehometownlosers. Once again, that's LOUSERS. Give us a like, hit us up, comment, share. We would love your interaction. Also, check us out on X, because it's no longer Twitter, .com. So X.com/hometownlosers. And retweet, or X, or Re-X, whatever they say. I don't know what they call it now.
Yeah.
So just whatever.
The entire thing.
Just do that thing. And hit us up.
Do that social media thing.
Does that social media thing. Yeah. There you go.
Do that.
All righty. OJ, what do you have for the game of the week this year? Or this week?
of the year.
Game of the week for this year.
The only team in town, literally, currently.
The game of the year. The Cardinals.
It was Cardinals at Kansas City Royals. Let's call it. Flip a coin, Sunday's game. Sunday night baseball, 6:15 p.m.
The game of the week this year.
Watch. Jesus. If you don't see any other game this week, see this one.
Definitely. Yeah, and exactly. Tell us what you think by re-Xing on our X account.
Just call it Rexing.
Oh my goodness.
Rexing.
Yeah.
Rex on our X.
Yeah. Oh my god.
Yeah.
If your reaction's on the wreck. Oh, good Lord. All right. Well, guys, it was great talking to you this week.
You too.
Obviously, we always have a lot of fun here. Listeners, we really appreciate you guys. And hopefully you catch us next week as we continue our silliness here. So have a great week. We will see you next time on the Hometown Losers Podcast. Have a great night, everybody.
Hey guys, this is Adam. Just want to say thanks for listening to the Hometown Losers Podcast. We'll see you next week as we continue our discussion of St. Louis sports.